This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
That's a perfect segue for Emeritus Professor of Botany, University of Queensland, and a 1948 expedition member, Raymond Lewis Specht, to come to the stage. Actually, you're lucky you got a seat. And Martin Thomas is going to have a conversation with Ray. For those two who have come late, he is one of the two surviving original members of the expedition who we're very honoured to have here.
Yeah, and we've actually also got a message from Peter Bassett-Smith.
Yes. The others,
Delivered by his son Robert. So
we might do that.
Do you want to come up?
Mr. Peter Bassett-Smith, who in fact is closer to 99 than 98 years of age, who was a photographer, cinema photographer also on the expedition on the Australian side, was all geared up big time to come here this week at that age. He's going to spend the week, but unfortunately he had, as it turned out, a mild stroke two nights before he arrived. But he's well ripped and he's doing very well. It's remarkable, you know, he's getting his speech back and everything, and he's sort of 99 in January. So he has his children. We had a reunion on Sunday for expeditioners and descended families, and him and his Peter Bassett-Smith's son and daughter have been here to represent him.
Introduced this by saying that we had very much hoped that we'd actually be able to have our two expedition survivors, as we're calling them, on the stage today. Peter Bassett-Smith was the cine photographer, and as Margot explained, is not here, but Emeritus Professor Raymond Specht is, and we're going to fossick through a few of Ray's memories in the course of this discussion. Now, I've already done a bit of preliminary fossicking of my own. Sally and I did an oral history interview with Ray a couple of years ago, and 3 years ago, and that is a resource now available to anyone who might want to inquire in the National Library of Australia Oral History Collection. So, in a way, what I'm going to do with Ray is, having heard some of the answers, hopefully we'll get some new information from this too, Ray. We're going to travel through a few of Ray's memories, and you're going to find out that Ray has an absolutely phenomenal memory and can answer in incredible level of detail. So forgive me if I interrupt now and then, Ray, so that we cover a range of topics in the discussion. But first I'd like to introduce Robert Bassett-Smith, who has a message, really, from Peter. You talked to him today. How is he?
Dad's actually improving quite well. His speech is much stronger today, even though the strokes affected his left side. But as I said to you people at the embassy yesterday, his mind is very much very active, and his spirit is here.
Good. Well, he had a few comments that he really wanted to relay to us about memories,
well,
is that right?
Before we move on, I'm actually a Robin Bassett-Smith, and my first name's Peter, so you can call me Rob. Dad related to me this morning that his specific memories, and I'll quote them, as being he was very impressed by the skills of the natives, and more particularly the spear making. As such, with spears and more the forks that go on the end of the spears for fishing, the making of the ends actually cut off at the last minute so that you get the barbs and you don't break the tines. And his because he's so impressed with that, he's noted that in his later life in steel manufacturing of cutlery, where the ends of the forks are actually cut off and nothing's really changed. So if the natives can do it, we're still doing it. The other area that he was very impressed with was the cooperation of the people and the governments fostering knowledge, preserving the history of the native culture, and more particularly the environment to share with future generations. Another observation of the natives was he was amazed with the acuity of gathering food. Young man noticed a honeybee, and he actually caught it and stuck a tiny little piece of white feather onto it and followed it some hundreds of metres back to its hive. Once at the hive, the native removed some honey but left enough for next time so that the hive was still active, which is very important than just devastating or eating out the your food bowl. And other areas of significance was the expedition had left a significant influences on his life in that the people should work together in harmony, and if anything that is worth doing well or worth doing is worth doing well, and that's the way he's continued his life. And finally, Dad, or Peter, was quite honoured last night to receive the American Embassy Medal for his involvement with the expedition and being able to share the friendship, the value and the knowledge for the benefit of all. And that's Dad's wishes to you people.
No, well, thank you very much, Robin. And I know that you'll, I think, pass on the best wishes of all of us, and I hope that he is out of hospital very soon, because it must be a very anxious time. And yeah.
Well, anyway, thank you. Yes, yeah. He'll be back with us and being able to share things, and it's been a very steep learning curve for me in the last few days and hours and over my general lifetime, and I look forward to working with you people in the future.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yes, indeed. Thank you, Rob. Now, for those of us that, well, certainly when Sally and I got to interview Peter, and we've talked to him quite often since, he is a most lovely man with a wonderful sense of humour. And one of the things that he was rather well known for is his comic songwriting. And we heard about this. And I'm not sure if he was the author of the song where it had a line in it. Well, it sort of said where all the what all the expedition members would be doing in heaven. And one of them had a line, up in heaven you won't find Ray because he's down on earth changing papers all day. And these are the papers of the plant specimens that you were drying, weren't they, Ray? We're going to hear a bit more about your education early life, I think, tomorrow in your own talk and when Lynn McCarthy talks about your work. So let's kind of catapult into your life, and actually you're not very old, you're 23 years old.
I'm 85.
Oh, I said were.
Yeah.
And
sorry.
had you known Aboriginal people growing up in Adelaide or anything like that?
No. I mean, I was listening to the ABC and there's the Colebrook settlement. Someone was talking had been a member of this destroyed Aboriginal group that was centred out in the Adelaide Hills. We heard about it and such forth in the paper, but my classmates at Adelaide High School 35 of us. Out of that group, five of us have worked in the north, leading things, psychiatry, my own work, etc. It was remarkable. And this all came independently. My professor, actually, Professor Joe Wood, his uncle was the curator, leader of the Coorong Maclay Mission. And as a youngster, he'd go down and on holidays, and the Aboriginal women would take him out and such forth. But in 1922, I think it was, Professor Wood Jones, who was professor of medical anatomy in the University of Adelaide, was working. We heard about, he got a big Rockefeller Foundation, or proportion of it, and people from the University of Adelaide and the Adelaide Museum went out into Central Australia and studied the Aboriginal groups. Mountford was one of them, Tyndale.
I think this is a very important point to note, in that there is this culture of studying, in fact, Aboriginal culture and society, yeah, very much based around Adelaide through the university and also the South Australian Museum. And Mountford is, I guess, one of the most famous people who came out of that culture.
But my professor, Joe Wood, in the 1920s, after the drought, the Federation drought, and the tremendous erosion and the rapid infestations of South Australia and Western New South Wales, etc., the dust storms that we've just experienced were just so bad that the CSIR and the Botany Department in the University of Adelaide set up an intensive research station. And this went back any time we got holidays, the University of Botany Department and the CSIRO would have to go up and study these vegetation. So Wood and Professor Osmond before him just couldn't join in with these anthropological expositions.
Because they had so much going on.
They had other things to do.
All right.
This was a sad thing from Professor Wood's point. That's all I'm trying to make.
Yeah, right. Okay, catapult to your first meeting with Mountford. Where was that, and what were your impressions?
Oh, I was finishing my BSc honours in the University of Adelaide, and I was studying the Adelaide Hills in great detail. Thank goodness, it was the most complicated ecological site in Australia, and two-thirds of September, I think it was, in 1946. Mountford had got the money from the National Geographic, and they said, we'll have a National Geographic photographer. Obviously, Hal Walker was in mind, Mountford as leader, an anthropologist, archaeologist from the Smithsonian, and a zoologist, and they wanted a botanist, ecologist, and Mountford knocked on Professor Wood's, Joe Wood's door, and the buzzer was built, and I had to come up from my research lab. I wasn't out in the field that day, thank goodness. And they said, look, we've got an expedition coming up in 1947 to go up and study rock art and the Northern Territory in Arnhem Land. We'd like you to be the botanist ecologist. You will get your transport and your food, but you won't get any pay. No. You'll have to work jolly hard. Well, I was bonded to the Education Department of South Australia to work for 6 years before I could get out, but They twisted my arm, obviously, and said, "You can't miss this, Ray." And so I joined.
Didn't they say something like, "You go on an expedition like this, and you know, you'll be known forever"?
That was the general reason.
Right. Yes.
Twisted my arm, I suppose. But
right.
We had to get ready by January 47. I had to finish my honours thesis. I was working in educational psychology and physical education subjects, and all these had to be done. In between time, thanks to my mother and support, and of course the botany department, I had to collect all this equipment and get it ready, including the camera, which I got from my uncle, Central New South Wales, which is on display. We couldn't buy cameras in those days. Anyhow, I couldn't afford it. But it had this camera for years. And we got it all ready for January 1947. And then Mountford told me that the expedition had been delayed for a year, because the American scientists from the Smithsonian had to go down to survey Bikini Atoll before the hydrogen bomb explosion. So we had a whole year. I had a whole year to fill in time before.
So did you start doing a lot of preparation and trying to understand the flora of Arnhem Land at that time? Was there literature for you to look at?
Well, yes, of course, but the important thing to know is that the professors at the Waite Agricultural Research Institute, which was part of the University of Adelaide, and the CSRO, Soils Division, the nutrition groups, and we had I had so many mentors. They had tried to get an overall picture of the soils and vegetation, the anthropology, etc., etc., ecology, you see, in a holistic way. And we had been, my mentors, were training people. Well, they were trying to pull all the disciplines together and work holistically.
So this was very cutting edge at the
time,
wasn't it?
This was cutting edge because my professor, Professor Osborne, had come out from Manchester in 1910. He was a plant pathologist, worked in the botany department, and worked in the pathology of cereal, agricultural plants. The British ASS, Association for the Advancement of Science, decided they'd had a phyto sociology and ecology group, the British and Tansley, Professor Tansley from Cambridge and later Oxford, was sponsoring the survey of the vegetation of Britain, supported by a man, Smith, in Edinburgh, etc. And they had, just before Osborne left, they had a phytosociology international meeting in which the people from France and Switzerland and Denmark and Holland and come across. And Osborne, of course, had to go as one of the biologists. He was involved, and then they came out on this British Association for the Advancement of Science and promoting the Australian Society for Advancement of Science, and they asked Osborne to write a book at Vegetation at Home and Abroad. Well, he wasn't in that day, but he had to learn all about the Adelaide Hills and so
okay,
forth.
Okay, so you sort of had to do very... You had to think on your feet.
He was learning on his feet, and he was learning in a different way, and then the Wake Institute, the CSIR...
Well, Ray, let's get into Arnhem Land, and because, again, you've got all these people of different disciplines, and you've got your anthropological people, you've got your birdman, Diagnon, Johnson doing mammals, that sort of thing. Surely there was an underlying ideal that you would all start cross-referencing and learning, putting this together ecologically. Did the ideal work in practice? Did you have a lot of discussion between yourselves about what you were finding?
Well, over the dinner table we did, but I was, as a youngster, with this holistic sort of approach. We had hope. Mountford, I think, realised this because he had grown up with it, just as I had, as a semi-professional, because I'd been training. Mountford understood it from grassroots. But there was, when you get 10, 11 scientists, all of which had their own little program, collect birds, collect fishes, collect something or other, worry about, etc., all their discipline, the ideal thing would be to get around the table, and we talked over the table, the CSIRO, at that point in time, as Kim Beazley had said, we were going to populate the north, and we didn't know anything about the north. CSIRO set up the Land Research and Regional Surveys, in which they brought geomorphologists, geologists, soil people, and more particularly my colleagues in plant ecology. And they worked as a team and did land use surveys right across the north, down into the arid zone and into New Guinea.
Right. Yeah. How are we going for time? Okay. I know one, of course, one area where your research linked in with one of the other researchers was the work of Margaret MacArthur, because she was working with Aboriginal women studying diet. And you ended up collaborating with her to an extent, didn't you?
Yes, well...
How did that happen?
Margaret, there had been a team from the Institute of Anatomy in Canberra. Had gone up into Papua New Guinea and did intensive surveys of the health and nutrition of the Trobriands up to the highlands. And the expedition was an ideal time for a team from the nutritional laboratories to come in, the Institute of Anatomy, to come into join the Arnhem Land Expedition. And Margaret, of course, most of the Aborigines at that point in time were in the settlements. Margaret, in particular, wanted to get out and study hunter-gatherers. So for two of her two-week trips at Hempel Bay and Groote Island, and again in Bickerton Island, I accompanied her, beside the thing, I chaperoned Margaret, but that's irrelevant. That wasn't needing any chaperone. But the wonderful
because
thing...
Because she was very she had capable to, in her own right, wasn't she?
She had to go out from midnight to midnight, record everything that the women and their associated children did, work out how much food they collected, how they collected it, and then weigh the food. You saw that, weighing the food. And then it was sent over to the... collected and sent over to Kelvin Hodges to do analysis, and down to Canberra to the Institute of Anatomy, where I think one of the attendant... on the cloakroom, her mother, someone Fish, FYSH, did and the team did analyses of it.
Really?
Brian Billington was studying the health, you know, all the parasites and everything else. And they were taking blood samples. And the big, the interesting thing was that the health of the Aborigines in the field were far better than, they were way above international standards compared with the ones in the settlement at that point in time.
So, in fact, in the settlement, they were on the flour and sort of damper and...
flour, sugar, baking and tea. Well, the children were trying to... They were trying to... Stuart James, the agricultural missionary, he was particularly trying to get food growing at the Roper River and CMS missions and at Owen Pelly. Fred Gray, of course, and Jerry Britner and all those people were getting a... They were trying to provide food for the seaplane base, the Catalina base that was there.
Yeah.
And so they had developed quite a good system,
yeah.
Which I think...
Now, in terms of, you know, Jerry was saying he was noticing these various, you know, some ructions, and it would be hard to imagine 17 people going out having an extended period together and there not being disagreements. And we know from McCarthy's diary, for instance, that he really had sort of some sustained conflicts with Mountford. Now, was any of that apparent to you?
Oh, I mean, the problem we had, well, Mountford had, because he was, you know, the poobah. He was like playing puppets and trying to get everyone to do their own thing. And then we had the disaster of the Phoenix going on a reef and everything being delayed and such forth. In spite of that, Mountford managed to get people, the ones there, to go out and do their stuff, as it were.
Right.
And, you know, there were... I mean, I was flexible. Margaret MacArthur had to go out and deal with Indigenous people. That Fred Gray and company had to organise a group of four families.
So there were a lot
20
of pressures,
people,
weren't there? Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, they were, most, many of them, and certainly at Owen Pelly, they would, we didn't have any, I didn't have any, and no, I think the there was no assistance from the CMS mission with Aborigines. There was assistance, of course, from the mission itself, but Harney had to get some people come down from the north. And but, you know, Amanasi and Yocallo, they were very cooperative, and Fred Gray was very cooperative, but there's a limited amount of... to get out and study Stone Age philosophies, which, of course, was all the American expedition and the local papers. Well, we were going out to study Stone Age Arnhem Land, and of course they were very well. The Aborigines were very sophisticated and becoming more Europeanized, if you like to use that word. And it was to get the expedition members that were interested in Stone Age Arnhem Land to go out and, you know, do these things in different places. You weren't just sitting around and within 10 kilometres square,
right.
You know.
Well, you yourself had a very good relationship with Mountford, didn't you? Like an enduring friendship?
Yes. He looked after me. Well, he appointed me, and then, of course... after the expedition, I was the only one in Australia. Well, I know the nutrition unit and Fred McCarthy, but I was in Adelaide, and certainly he was preparing the films. Peter Bassett Smith's films.
Yeah, because it's worth pointing out that it didn't just end in 1948, did it? The publication of the reports and the four wonderful volumes, I don't think, ended until 1964.
That's right.
So you were all together and working on your papers and the publications for a long time afterwards, weren't you?
Yes, well, in my case, I was fully employed. I had 6 months after the expedition to go to Brisbane and meet my wife in a pond on Fraser Island. That's right. That's pure luck of the expedition.
Right.
And after 6 months trying to identify all these 13,500 times 10, all the herbaria of the world, it seemed. I was fully employed as a lecturer or senior the University of Adelaide.
Yep.
That was a 6-day, 5.5-day week, but to do my field work in the desert and down in the 90-mile desert on heathland, we had to get out hundreds of miles on the weekends, and in between time at night we would work on these expedition reports. The unfortunate part was when, and Mountford eventually, after getting the films ready and going up to Tiwi Island on another expedition I think it was 1952 or something, but
a bit later, I think.
The zoology reports, except for the fish, because poor Bob Miller, I'm sorry, had left. He'd left the Smithsonian and gone to Ann Arbor.
Yeah.
And so someone else, Taylor,
right,
eventually had to work on these fishes.
Someone else
and
had
it took
to
a long
do the writing
time,
on.
Whereas
yeah.
Bert Dagnan's and how. And Dave Johnson and Mitchell in the Adelaide Museum. Sorry. We had to struggle at
right.
night. Mountford gave a tremendous amount of help in getting photographs and pulling all this together. It was a phenomenal job he had to
indeed,
face.
Indeed, indeed.
It went on and on and on until 64.
Now, it's good. We're going to hear more of you later in the symposium. So we're just going to, and I feel this whole event is like a huge Chinese banquet where, you have to sort of pace yourself because, that there's so much more to come. So, Ray, one last question before lunch. What do you think has been the legacy of the expedition, like both personally and perhaps more generally, in terms of science and ecology?
Well, in ecology, which in conservation, this expedition, we set the groundwork for Fulbrightists. People came out. I was invited. The UNESCO Arizona Research Station, they came, a research program from the 1950s. The work that we had done was just being transferred from the Australian-American, continued into research, into Arizona studies between Australia and America. Followed on with the Mediterranean ecosystem because I was working on chaparral and the Mediterranean climate Australia. We promoted this worldwide.
Yeah.
And every nation became involved. And my opinion was what Arthur Caldwell and others were doing to get us working, not just thinking of Australia, but and we had a great difficulty of understanding Australia, and then we don't know enough about it now. But thinking between America and Australia and Europe and, of course, all the world, Asia.
Right, right. Well, thank you so much, Ray, and it's wonderful having you here. And I know Ray is going to be sharing his views again later in the program. So please, a big thank you for Professor Spett.
Thank you.
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs, and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.